Hello, everyone. Welcome into another episode of Kentucky Daily, a daily podcast covering your University of Kentucky Wildcats. I'm Sean Smith. He's Derek Terry. Derek, we just dropped a bonus episode. We were planning just to do the mailbag, and then we got into a recruiting spill about everything going on in Kentucky football. And you talked to me today at Basketball Media Day about how much you really enjoy the football recruiting side of this, and you just, your passion for this, your knowledge of it, everything, it started coming out. And I said, all right, let's throw it up as a bonus. So if you're catching this episode first, go back. You're going to find two. There's bonus recruiting news that we're just going to keep all in that episode. It's really good stuff from Derek. It's just a kind of a breakdown of where the program is at wide receiver, what's maybe on the horizon here. And I thought it was very good just to maybe put that to itself. That's why if we started that episode talking about mailbag and you're like, where's the freaking mailbag again? So it's here.
Yeah. Yeah. You would have been 15 minutes in on that last episode. So Sean, we got quite a few questions here. Yeah.
We're jumping right into it. No longer delays, right?
Yeah. No longer delaying. Did you have a certain order you wanted to do this? Or you just want to
just jump right in it. See what you got.
Let's just start off the top. Let's just go with the big question from Hayden. What record do you see Kentucky finishing the season out on? Let's just do regular season here.
Well, you can even throw Braylon's in there too. Does Kentucky win out?
Okay.
So we'll throw both those in there. And I think that they do. I think that they win out. I think they go 11-1. You saw PFF, I think yesterday, come out and say Kentucky has the easiest schedule remaining. And they do when you look at it. They obviously have some hurdles to overcome. They've got to go to Starkville and win for the first time since 2008 next week. They've got to beat Tennessee at home. I know a team that's been a thorn in their side. They went to Knoxville last year and won. Derek, I just feel like that the motivation within this program right now, they're in a better spot than what they were 2018 to continue that success. Mark Stoops has talked about it, that you can't let that loss to Georgia carry over and cost you again. I don't think it will. I think the bye week's at the perfect time. Go out there. You get this one at Starkville next. I just think Kentucky's going to win out. I think they're going 11-1. But if they do, I think at worst they're going 10-2. But I'm going to predict 11-1.
Yeah, I'm not sure I was ready to answer this. I definitely think they're winning the last three. Like I would really be. I mean, obviously Vandy and New Mexico State, no problem. Even Louisville, I think is going to be a double digit win. Tennessee with Hendon Hooker,
yeah,
I think is definitely the – if he's playing – I know he got hurt against Ole Miss. If he plays, I think it's the toughest game of
it
the
is.
Five. But if Joe Milton is playing, I actually like Kentucky's chances in that game. You know, at home, that crowd's going to help.
And that's the game there 3 years ago that cost them a New Year's Six game was Tennessee. And that's where I'm coming from, that I just think that the focus within this program, Mark Stoops – you know, Mark Stoops has talked about what he's learned and stuff the last few years. Not only has this program learned, these players learned. I think Mark Stoops has learned too. And the staff, these guys that have been there, you know, how to handle success, how to do things that your program hasn't done, Derek. And I just think that they're going to be locked in. But you mentioned that. I do think that that's their toughest game remaining. As far as talent-wise, that's their toughest game remaining. Tennessee's no pushover of that offense.
I want to say – I see the reason people think 11-1. I guess I'm leaning that way. I'm slightly leaning. I'm with you though. No worse than 10-2. I think something bad would have had to have happened to finish worse than 10-2.
And that gets us into the Kentucky update question. What bowl do you think Kentucky gets into, Derek? 10-2, I mean, you want to say a New Year's Six, but you're going to look there and let's just talk about it. Georgia's going to go undefeated in the regular season. They're probably, in my opinion, they're going to win the SEC championship. If they don't, then they're still a one-loss team, and Alabama's a one-loss team possibly. You got Ole Miss there who's already played Alabama that you could see Ole Miss play themselves into an 11-1 record. I think if you're a Kentucky fan, you need Kentucky to go 11-1, and I honestly think you need Ole Miss to lose again.
Yeah, you're right. The thing with Georgia, too, I mean, I think Georgia, as long as it goes 12-0 in the regular season, it's a lock to get in the playoffs, whether it loses to Alabama. I mean, I think Alabama's the only team that can beat them. Ole Miss couldn't beat Georgia, I don't think.
Which helps Kentucky. If Kentucky's not a playoff team, if two SEC teams get in, it helps Kentucky with the new
Yes, it helps them a lot. It's projecting so far out because so much has to happen. I mean, theoretically, you would still think they're not going to have probably enough good wins to actually get in. But if Kentucky's 11-1, they're at least going to be like in the conversation, right, for that fourth spot. Like I said, I don't think they're going to get it because you're going to have a bunch of other teams and you're going to be weighing those resumes. But
you're going to have craziness happen around college football.
Yeah. I'm going to take this a different direction. And it's for the long-term thought for Mark Stoops. What the hope is, what, 2023, 2024, that you go to a 12-team playoff?
Yeah.
Well, you're a lock in a few years.
Yeah.
If you're 11-1 and you're a UK team in the SEC.
And you've been seeing those brackets come out, just people playing around with it. And
yeah,
they're in that spot now to be a playoff team when that expansion happens.
I mean, if you're pushing 10 wins in the SEC, you're going to be, you know, in that mix to be a playoff team here in a few years.
The thing that's going to hurt them if they do go 11-1, and I don't want to spend too much time on this. I want to move on to the other questions. But the thing that I think is going to hurt them is just the strength of schedule. Mm-hmm. Florida not being very good from what it seems like. I mean, Florida's already got 3 losses in the league. I think they're going to lose to Georgia, so there's 4. Wouldn't be surprised if they lost another one somewhere along the way. I said it last week that you needed them to win the LSU game just for your strength of schedule. But, I mean, who knows, Derek? Let's just say that something happens. And how impressive does Georgia look in an SEC title game if they play Alabama? Does that help Kentucky if Georgia goes and beats Alabama by a couple of touchdowns and Kentucky went to Athens? And you're in that spot in the AP poll, and we know that that doesn't matter when the college football playoff rankings come out. But if you could have some craziness just happen and you need those Power 5 schools again from the Big 12, you need a couple of teams to lose and not be undefeated or get a couple of losses there and win the league, then maybe Kentucky has a chance. Maybe that SEC name behind them puts them there. But I think that this is a team that if they go 11-1, they're at least going to be one of those teams that day in that selection show when it comes out that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the bowl right now, I think the Sugar Bowl, because Trey Scott also asked a similar question to Kentucky.
Man, that's a fantastic opportunity for your program. There or Peach Bowl. It's fantastic.
Oh, those are the two I would look at. I know some – I don't have it pulled up in front of me, but I know a few of those take out large teams. I mean, so UK could be in the mix there. Obviously, you know, it won't be – I don't know if the Rose Bowl is even in the rotation for the college football playoff this year, but either way, that's always a Big Ten.
It's Cotton Bowl and what's the other one that's this year? There's two. That's the two. The Cotton Bowl I know is 1 year, right?
I don't know which one is.
Or one of the
– Probably two. Not in Miami, is it? Or is it?
One's in Texas. And then one – okay, it's Cotton and Orange. Yeah, which I think – What's the other one? Cotton Bowl and the Orange Bowl, I think, are the two playing games.
Okay. Yeah.
And then the national championships at Lucas Oil this year.
Yeah, so, I mean, maybe they're getting to a spot – I know they just went to the Citrus Bowl a couple years ago when they were 9-3, but, like, That's the good news with what they did in the first half of the schedule is, I mean, they should win 9 games minimum. So they're going to go to a solid bowl. Let's see.
Brandon asked about do we think that they make history and go 11-1? And then he actually talked about the most challenging games on the schedule. He mentioned Mississippi State and Tennessee. So I think we already answered that one. I just wanted to make sure that we recognize Brandon there, that we got his question. Do you see anything that you want to move on to that kind of fits what we're talking about here?
That fits what we were talking about.
Matt's got
somewhat similar because we were talking about Mississippi State. It's from Fly Guy. He says we need to keep spirits high because even in a loss, we still put on Georgia more of a game than anyone else this season. How will the coaching staff make sure we stay focused after a loss?
Man, that bye week helps. I'm telling you, it does, because you get to recover from it. You get to take that week. I know that they practiced they took Monday. I know they practiced on Tuesday, right? If I'm not mistaken. So you get to get some guys that are injured, that are banged up, maybe get some guys back. You get a week removed. You get to watch some college football on Saturday, which I think helps you flip and turn the calendar forward. And if you're Mark Stoops and the staff, Derek, I think that you come in and you lay out the outline and you show – to me, I would go show the one-loss teams that have made the college football playoff in the past years and be like, look, you have a ton to play for here, not just for a national championship hope, but a New Year's Six Bowl, something this program's not done. That's the thing that lies ahead. I titled the podcast episode, I think, on Monday, about the still a special season coming up for Kentucky football if they take care of business. That would be my approach, is that you're getting these guys in there. You're like, all right, we went to number one Georgia. We battled them. We took some momentum out of that place. Now you get to go do something this program's not done since 2008. Go beat Mississippi State and Starkville and add another accomplishment to this great season.
Yeah, I think you really got to lean on your senior leadership and those guys that were there in 2018. I know Josh Pascal didn't really play a whole lot that year, but DeAndre Square, Yusuf Corker, those guys that were in the rotation for that really good team. I mean, they let that game in Knoxville get away. You're right. I think the bye week comes at a great time. I mean, these kids, I mean, they know they just played against the best team in the country. I mean, they went down there and they got beat. I mean, just like everyone else who plays Georgia in the regular season is going to get beat by them. So I don't think they should hang their heads at all. I mean, definitely take this bye week, regroup. I think they definitely recognize what's in front of them. They see the schedule and they know that, you know, big things are still ahead or can be achieved. Looks like a lot of these others are more into the team a little bit. Matt, he filled this all bag up for us.
I've got several.
He says, I got several. All right, so here's the first question. We use the tight ends a lot against Georgia and it worked really well. Do you think we see more of that moving forward?
Yes. And the reason being is you have a quarterback that's getting more comfortable week by week. I think that will be enough to utilize those guys more because they're early in the season, Derek. Will Levis, and rightfully so, was looking one direction, and it was the number one. Because I think it was, one, he didn't look comfortable in the pocket going through his reads and his progressions. Also, Wandell was the guy getting open. But now, those tight ends, you saw Liam Cohen get creative with some plays, some of those RPOs, some of the things that they do. I think that you have some guys there in the game. I know Bates dropped that beautiful throw from Levis that should have been a catch. Rigg made some nice catches there. Those tight ends, if you can get, to me, a combined 7 to 8 targets a game from your tight ends, I think you could take so much pressure off the rest of your offense.
Yeah, I mean, Rigg had a good game. Like you said, Bates should have had another catch. He dropped the one over the middle. And then, of course, Cummings has played a ton this year. We'll see what his health is like. I think Stoop said on his radio show he was in a sling. But, yeah, I think you'll definitely see them more. You know, they threw it 42 times against Georgia. They were down, had to start airing it out. I'll be curious. You know, they're always going to rely on the ground game. I mean, they didn't have a choice. They were averaging less than 2 yards running the ball against Georgia. So, I mean, they had to go to the air a little bit more. I'm wondering if they'll settle on a kind of a sweet spot these last 5 games where maybe around 30 throws.
Did you gain any confidence in them, though, that if they get down, let's say, like a few years ago at Mississippi State with Sawyer, they ended up getting down a couple of scores, I think 10 points, 13 or something, and they had to start throwing the ball. And that's when Eddie Grand just went all aired out because they kind of had to. Did you gain some confidence, though, that if they do get down a touchdown or 10 points or something early in the game, that they can come out and maybe sling it around a little bit and Levis get you a big play there? I gained a lot of confidence in him Saturday.
Yeah, I did too. You know, he made the throw. I mean, I thought he played great. He should have, you know, he didn't get as much help as you'd like to see from his receivers. I think Josh Ali coming back will help. It sounds like he's on track to play. I mean, he's, in my opinion, quite a bit more dependable than Isaiah Epps. And if he's going to be the second target, I think that helps. And the tight ends keep coming along. I think it'll be a loss, though, if Cummings can't play this next game. I bet he's going to be on the fence. He's
different, man. He's just different than the rest of them. And you see a lot of potential with him. And I'm sitting here thinking about the options that they're going to have moving forward with Cummings. And then when they get a Keaton Upshaw back healthy, that you could put them both on the field together. And you really like what you got at that position.
That would have been a good game for Upshaw the other day. Matt's second question. Clearly, we need more wide receiver weapons. I know we're recruiting guys like Brown and Key in the Syracuse transfer, which is Taj Harris. If we get 2, is that enough? I'm not sure if he's asking if 2 transfer wide receivers are enough or if just 2 of those 3 that he mentioned.
I think he means 2 of those 3. Like if they get two guys.
No, I would say they need more. Definitely need more than just those two. Well, because I think they're going to get Brown and Key.
You need more, and you need to develop the guys that you got that are younger. You need DeKell. You need a Chris Lewis. You need all those guys, a Chauncey Magwood, to just continue getting better and better. But this is going to be something where if you get Brown and you get Key, I still think that they are a prime option to possibly land a couple of transfers at that spot. Not just one. I could see them landing multiple guys at that spot.
Yeah. I was driving. I was stopped at the gas station, and I was texting with my buddy.
Love how you corrected that right there.
Yeah, I was definitely at the gas station because I remember because gas is like $3.09 in Tennessee. And I was texting him. We were talking about the game. It's a Sunday morning. And I told him, like, I think UK's whole receiver room, the guys that start that first game and play that first game, I was trying to put a number on the combined catches coming back. It's going to be very few. I think that whole room is going to be totally different next season. I think Wandell's going to go to the NFL, like we just talked about in the last episode. Ali doesn't have any eligibility left. I think Epps technically has a year, but he's already been here 5 years. I would be surprised if he's back for another year, although I don't know that for sure. I'm just thinking he probably won't. Those are your top three receivers. You know, Magwood's played this year. Like I said, I've had the expectation that he's going to end up with some catches down the stretch, but you know, I think they're going to rely a lot on developing Magwood, DeKell Crowdis. You know, hopefully he can come back and at least play in like one or two games here. Like maybe he can get in against New Mexico State. Just something that he can come. I don't think you're going to rely on him in, you know, a big moment if he comes back. But just you would think that Vanderbilt New Mexico State game, if he's healthy, you would think they'll have a lead in hand enough to where you could get him in and play. And then Chris Lewis. I love Chris Lewis as a prospect. I thought he was like the best wide receiver guy they've recruited in a while, but you know, I saw him at media day. You were probably around him. Like we watched the open practice, like physically he wasn't ready. And I think that was pretty much the expectation, was that he wasn't going to be ready to really help them this year. But I think next year, definitely, I think he's definitely going to be playing a lot. And then, you know, let's say right now it sounds like they're leading for Berrian Brown and Dane Key. If they get both those guys, I think Brown helps them next year. Key, we'll see. I think he'll have a chance. But are you going to go into next season just relying on those guys with maybe a DeMarcus Harris, something like that? I'm thinking the number's three for transfers. I really do. Yeah. I think if you can get three, that's what you want.
And you don't know who goes in the portal between now and after the bowl season. Like you went and you got a guy like Wandell that you've showcased this year. You're appealing to guys of Wandell's caliber. I'm not saying another Wandell Robinson, a kid that has ties to the state of Kentucky, is going to come in and be available, but maybe some of those guys that they've recruited in the past that they already had relationships with, that it doesn't work out somewhere, or they just go and you see a Power Five guy that's been successful and they want a different system, or a coach gets fired or moves on. You never know what it does. Like we were sitting here a year ago talking about, we didn't know exactly where Kentucky's offense was going. We thought Bo Allen was going to be the guy this year.
Yeah.
And then a month later, we're like, okay, Bo Allen's not the guy next year. It's Will Levis. So it made us look like fools. But then again, that's the world that we live in now with the transfer portal. But that leads us into the third question from Matt. He said, I've heard that the 6-0 start was opening doors to some high-level recruits, possibly even commitment flips from other big programs. How big do you think this could be? Can we step up and compete or get more high four and five stars? Do you think the loss hurts that momentum? I'll answer the last part. Absolutely not. The loss hurts nothing with the momentum. If anything, I think that you got an opportunity to take advantage of that spotlight, show off your program. Your quarterback slung it 42 times. That's even more appealing to these recruits and these wide receivers when you say, all right, look, we got Chris Rodriguez. We've got all these other running backs. We have a quarterback that has a strong arm that just keeps getting better and better. Come play in the SEC, be a consistent, I'm getting there with this, top 15 to top 20 program. I think that's what Kentucky is moving towards. It did not hurt their momentum at all Saturday.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think, I think a lot of, I think he'll go back and he'll listen to this, Matt, that is, we'll listen to the recruiting episode. That'll answer some of the ones. But, yeah, I do think there are definitely other guys. You know, you saw him start to pop up, and not every guy that pops up on the radar is going to be a legitimate, you know. Sam McCall, for example, is one. He's committed to Florida State. He's a top 50 player. he mentioned, you know, wanting to visit Kentucky. As far as I know, he's not visited the UK yet. Maybe he'll get up for the Tennessee game. You know, it's going to be hard, I think, to flip a guy like that regardless. But they are – would they have gotten that reception from a top 50 recruit if they weren't 6-0? You know, probably not, right? So that's one area. I still think it helps a lot with the – not necessarily this class, but the future. You know, you're getting – I was thinking about this the other day. Just a kid like Dakota Patterson from Corbin who's in the 2023 class. So Dakota's probably like, I don't know, 17. So Kentucky's been going to bowls every year since what, 2016?
Yeah.
So
changes the perception.
Know, yeah, more and more kids who are coming up, you know, if Stoops stays 4 or 5 more years and they, you know, I'm not saying they win 10 games every year, but, you know, stay pretty consistent. Like, you're going to have a whole new batch of recruits who don't, to be frank, like, they don't remember it when UK sucked as a program. Like, yeah. They'll always kind of have seen Kentucky as a fairly competitive team. And, you know, you hope that they can take it a step further and, you know, can – it's just going to be hard as long as you're in the same division as Georgia with the way that they're rolling. Like, that's going to be every year their toughest game. But just being perceived differently, like, I don't know, Sean. I mean, who's to say if they keep playing well, maybe 5 years from now that basketball school label gets not necessarily shed. I mean, the history Kentucky has in basketball, it's probably always going to be looked at somewhat as that. But You still saw this year a lot of national guys when they came around writing about that Kentucky-Georgia game. They were talking about it being a basketball school. Well, if UK football keeps playing in big games the next 4 or 5 years, do you think they're still going to be writing that every single time they write about a big UK football game? I would say probably not. So
what is fresh on your memory? And success changes it. I've talked to you about this multiple times about the Tennessee football program. Recruits, Tennessee's not an elite program anymore to the age of recruits. Because what have they seen from Tennessee for the last decade? A lot of losing seasons.
Yeah.
Where you, that's how you change it. That's how you change it, by consistency over the course of a decade. And now we're approaching the latter half of the decade of success for this football program. You're in the backside of a decade that now, when you go to a bowl game 6 straight years, you do that 7, 8, 9, and you continue building your program, then you've changed it entirely, because those kids that you're recruiting now that are 16, 17, 18 years old, those kids were 8, 9 when they started watching your program. That's a pretty big deal, because they don't remember anything before that. Because I can tell you as a child going back, I don't remember anything about programs before I was like 9, 10 years old. I didn't watch
it. Yeah. I mean, when I was a kid, it was USC, it was dominant. And
man, they were.
It looks like this was a question we could have gotten to earlier. I just hadn't seen it. It's from Robert, as we were talking about a little bit earlier. So with 5 games to go and assuming the 4-game redshirt rule is still in effect, which it is, who might we see, he put Crowdis in parentheses, that could contribute down the stretch yet maintain the redshirt? I'd say the big one is Jagger Burton is someone. I think he's only played in 1 game. Chris Lewis was another guy. I think Vanderbilt, you know, you can't assume, because, you know, you assumed against Chattanooga. I assumed against Chattanooga they'd be able to get these guys in there. It was a close game. So in an ideal world, they would take care of business against Vanderbilt at some point in the second half, and also New Mexico State. So those are two that pop out in my mind. Crowdis, like I said, I think he'll try. Sean, is there anybody else? I mean, basically any true freshman who has not played in like what I'm trying to figure out is Jamarius Dinkins got in against Georgia. I don't remember seeing Khalil Saunders out there. So, like, are they trying to preserve at least one of their red shirts? I'm not really sure. You know what I mean? Like, you play Saunders against Florida. I don't even remember if he played against LSU or not, but it's like they were maybe thinking about saving it. So it's kind of hard to know. I know, I think on our website, we keep a track of that, but the participation charts are not, they're not very accurate. So it's kind of hard to know.
And this isn't a red shirt note for me or anything, because we're talking about Bo Allen on this one. But right, I think that's a guy, the back half of the schedule, New Mexico State, Vanderbilt, you would almost like to get him a full game of reps, like a half against New Mexico State, maybe a quarter and a half or so against Vandy. So not getting into that red shirt role, but you're talking about developing something behind him and getting some experience, because you're going to need that.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, not just Bo. I mean, you talk about, really any non-starter. Like, Martez Thriller has already burned his red shirt, and he's not, you know, he's mostly played special teams, but that could be a game where he plays the whole second half or whatever at linebacker. So that was a good question. I really like those big picture questions. I just think you have to assume at this point in the season, if it's at a position that is not decimated by injury, so that defensive line spot we were talking about, like they're probably having to play Dinkins and Saunders out of necessity at this point. If the position, you know, isn't desperate for it, I don't see anyone really breaking in. So, like, you would think at this point, if they could have helped you, they'd be playing by now. We got a question here talking about the outside run. Where are the outside zone runs that were supposed to Rams revolutionize our offense? I know we haven't been too good at it, but I thought we continue to work at it and try to mix it in. I think it just turned out that Chris Rodriguez was way better at running inside zone. And they did run it quite a bit against LSU, and it worked well because LSU couldn't stop the run. So I think what you're having to see right now is Cohen just trying to do what's best for this roster. I think if Cohen sticks around long enough, I bet we'll go back and look at things in year three that were a little different than year one, just because he maybe feels like he has the personnel to match it a little bit better.
I agree with that. And to an extent here, it shows that he's not being stubborn and trying to force what he wanted to do. He's doing what fits his team, and I think that's a good sign and quality of a good coach and a good coordinator. You're doing what works, and it became evident that he found out just how good Chris Rodriguez is and stuff, leading the league in rushing. I mean, you're going to do whatever makes it successful. So that I think that you're right, though. The more that they go along throughout his tenure here as an offensive coordinator, and they get more comfortable, these offensive linemen are in the system longer, I think that you're going to see these running backs and all that, and they're going to do some things different as they get better, maybe recruit guys that fit what they want to do.
Hey, Sean, we got a question for you here, and it's from @1982 UK grad. He's asking you this question. What are you doing to address the kicking game, including kicking extra points, field goals, and the return game? It's not SEC caliber.
Kicking it a little bit higher would help. I think that's the blocking guys. My goodness, did you see some of the stuff Cole Kublik put up on Twitter from Georgia's defensive line? I mean, dudes were like stoning just Kentucky offensive linemen. I mean, goodness gracious. But no, that is an area that you just can't lose points in that spot. I mean, 4 points. I mean, 30-17 looks a lot different than 30-13. When you're talking about that game Saturday, and it comes to you scored another scoring opportunity, you can't have that bite you the next 5 games. You've got to get every single point you can out of those gimme field goals, those gimme extra points. Now we're talking 40 and out. That's different. But anything like that field goal Saturday has to be 3 points. That extra point has to go through.
And I'm just joking around. Clearly he was meaning what UK is doing. Was Matt Ruffalo? I don't remember the low kicks being a thing until this year.
And they're super low this year. He had one. He had that one blocked against Ole Miss too. That if I remember, he kicked it low. Like, I don't know.
He has a few that don't get off the ground, huh?
Yeah. Like that one Saturday had no chance. The last one. I mean, you just can't have that happen. And he has been really good. Like, and that's the thing too. I don't know if he's even missed very many. It seems like every time he's missed a PAT or a field goal, it's been because somebody got a hand on it. So he's really accurate when it gets beyond the line of scrimmage.
So, see a couple more here. This is a tricky one just because I don't think it's an unfair question. I'm careful with talking about transfers. But we'll answer it. Yes, this is from Brad. Does McClain's emergence cause Drennan to transfer, or do you see him becoming a contributor at some point? Let's phrase it this way, Sean. I definitely think the skill sets that those two have are very similar. And listen, we didn't see Drennan against Georgia, right? So, I mean, I said this in the press box. I might have said it to you, or I might have texted it to somebody else. I don't think this is out of line to say. I felt like against LSU, they were trying really hard to get Drennan going, and it didn't go so well. And I felt like at the time that was – I'm not going to say it was a last shot for Drennan, but I felt like that was them saying, hey, here's a chance. see what you can do with it, because Jatan's back now and you guys are pretty similar. And listen, Jatan, even against Georgia, you could see it. Like, he is just more productive when he's out there, and I think he can do some more things. Now, does that mean Drennan's never going to contribute or never going to play again? Like, that I can't say. I don't know. But going forward, I guess to answer this question going forward, I think you're going to see a whole lot of Jatan if he's healthy.
And obviously they like Drennan. They've been trying to work him in and things that they like him, but we've heard a lot of good things about Jatan McClain, and we're seeing it now. When he's in there, he's just a difference maker with his ability out of the backfield and in the passing game. And you saw Saturday and stuff. I know people talking about how he didn't hit the hole there on that opening drive on that carry, but when you see the replay, you see a dude in there, and somebody replied to me today talking about that there was a hole there. Well, here's my take on it. Kentucky was going to get hit with a holding call because that was the only thing Luke Fortner was going to be able to do to keep him from making that play.
I thought the same thing. I was like, man, it looks like there's a hole there, but you see where Fortner's blocking him from. You're right. He would have had to have held, and I'm not convinced with the way that Jordan Davis moves that dude, what appeared to be a hole, wouldn't have swallowed up real fast. So I think Jatan saw that and thought, hey, I'll try to go back the other way. And, you know, there wasn't a hole on the other side. I mean, that was collapsed. But
Fortner's been a guy that's been an all-SEC guy. With the preseason rankings, and then and the guy that's been SEC Player of the Week on the offensive line a couple of times, and he made him look like he weighed 150 pounds.
That's one player. That's what one player did.
Yes,
for that play.
And you saw what other team, what it did to the second level. There was nobody getting to that next level to get anything on a linebacker. You know why? Because that dude's a tank standing right there in front of you. I would have laid down. I just said. I know Cole Kubrick asked, or somebody, I can't remember, something that is mentions, like, how many snaps do you think I could get there? And he's like, I'd try to bite him. And Cole's like, how are you going to bite that guy? That dude's going to throw me to the side.
Yeah. I mean, have you been seeing, I'm on board. There are people talking about him winning the Heisman this year.
Go for it. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, he's an absolute freak. Looks like we got one more here that I see. You might have some of the DMs. It's from Kyle. He's got two questions here. First one is Coach O, who obviously got fired by LSU this week, or mutually parted ways, whatever you want to say. He's getting his money. That's what matters, right? Is Coach O someone?
Cheeseburger.
Yeah. My hamburger. Basically, the question's asking, should Stoops look to add Ogeron? One, Ogeron says he's not really planning to coach next year, at least as of now. Two, the guy's making that much money. I don't think you're going to see him go be a position coach anywhere. And two or three, I guess this might be three. I don't think a whole lot personally of Orgeron as a coach. Could he get you some recruits? I would say probably, but I don't see that being realistic for him coming to UK. I don't see it being realistic that he goes anywhere to be an assistant, not with $17 million going to his bank account the next few years. But the second, did you have anything to add to that? Or
I don't want this to sound bad, but I thought he was destined to get fired the entire time.
Yeah.
And then they win a national championship and things. And it just goes to show you that I think even LSU as a program just thought that it had more to do with the talent that he had on the roster than it had to do anything with him.
Clearly. Yeah. I mean, they didn't give him much time after.
Did you ask Robert's question? I know we talked about it with five games to go and assuming the 4-game redshirt rule is still in effect. Okay. I just want to make sure that we ask it. I know we talked about it. Let me look at the DMs real quick.
The second one from Kyle was about Spencer Rattler. And this is, projecting a lot, but he said if Rattler does enter the portal, would UK pursue? I don't think so. I'm not really sure what to think about Rattler, because every quarterback that Oklahoma has had for a long time under Lincoln Riley, from Baker Mayfield to Kyler Murray to Jalen Hurts, I might even be forgetting somebody in there, they were all very, very good. And, you know, I know that this was a 5-star kid who's come in and taken that job, but like Rattler really struggled this season. So I don't, like I said, I don't know what to expect of him, and I don't think there would be much interest there mutually. I mean, I think, you know, Spencer's from Arizona. I could see him wanting to go back out west. And the thing is too, I mean, if Levis is coming back, and I don't see why he wouldn't, I mean, that's Liam's guy, right? So I don't think you're gonna see him pursue a quarterback this year. We'll see what happens when Levis is gone. Maybe they have a 2023 quarterback they like. Maybe at that point they feel like Bo Allen's ready. I mean, this is a long way out. It's not really it's hard to say at this point, but I don't think you'll see that. I mean, spots are going to be pretty precious this year with where they're going to need to address some positions. So I don't think it's going to be quarterback.
No, I don't think so either. And then we had two in the DMs here. This one's from Back to Final Four. Recruiting and transfer portal needs this offseason. Who are the most likely super senior candidates? There is a world where several players on defense could come back. If none, few do come back. Project next year's starting defense. Thanks. Love what you guys are doing.
Well, we talked about wide receivers with the transfer portal. I think that's definitely priority number one on the whole roster. Depending on who they finish with in recruiting, I think a veteran edge rusher would help. Do you have any other positions you think they really need to focus on? I think maybe linebacker. And I'll be curious to see who backs up Trayvon Ripken next year, because I think there's really a clear-cut guy there.
I could see them going a JUCO route or something, maybe in the secondary, maybe another.
Oh, yeah, corner's another spot, yeah.
Yeah, I could see them adding there just to get some depth, and just the success that they've had with a guy like Brandon Echols and stuff a couple years ago. I could see them going that route and getting some experience and someone that's ready to come in and add some quality depth at that position. Obviously, Carrington Valentine's getting a ton of experience and stuff this year, and everything across the board. You feel good about Vito moving forward in the secondaries. I could see them still adding some guys there as well.
Yeah, that's a good point.
We have one more, I believe, from Ezra. Do you guys think people overreacted a little too much to that strip sack where Jones didn't go after it? I know the ball wasn't whistled dead, but 9 out of 10, that play is whistled dead once it comes out. And also, I think the score doesn't do what UK did justice. If Jones falls on that ball, that's 7 points wiped away, and it seemed like UK left some points on the field. I don't want to say that people overreacted, because you're taught to play to the whistle, and there was not a whistle. And when I went back and watched that game last night, had somebody been there to pick that ball up, Derek, that's offensive lineman you're trying to outrun. And I like Jaquez Jones in that race, getting down the field.
There's no doubt in the moment. I mean, it was a huge thing because Georgia scored the very next play. Like I said on Sunday, or maybe Monday when we record, I can't remember. I think it was Monday when we recorded. I understand if other people don't feel this way. It's perfectly fine. I didn't feel like it was going to make that much of a difference in the long run. I just think Georgia's talent, even if they held them off the board there, it was just going to be too much for UK to actually win. But again, I'm okay with people thinking maybe the afternoon would have been different. We'll never know. That's kind of the thing about sports.
I think Georgia would have won, but you could have had a scenario where it's 7-7 at the half if you take that.
Yeah, I mean, if the logic is that Jaquez Jones is on his feet, picks that ball up, runs it back for a touchdown, then hell yeah, I guess anything could have happened.
Or at least you take the points off the board for Georgia.
Yeah, that was more of how I saw it. Yeah, because somehow he already ended up on the ground.
I don't either. Like, and I mean, the ball right there in front of him, but I mean, it wasn't just him that didn't go for it. I think in the middle of the field too that didn't. And Georgia, I mean, they fall in there. And a lot of times, and here's the thing that I know the officials missed some stuff. They had a guy half a yard short that they didn't review. But credit to the officials in any situation like that. Same thing happened at Kentucky, Florida, when Kentucky won the game in the Swamp. Don't blow that thing dead. Let it play out and let replay overturn it. And that's what they did. And it was the right call on the field, and then replay upheld it.
I think that's a really good point. I'll say this. That won't be a mistake, or at least it shouldn't be, if UK's coaching staff and the players are paying attention. That shouldn't be an issue here for a while, because you've got a player on your team. And not just a player. I mean, like you said, like no one else for UK went for the ball. So it wasn't – I mean, I know Jaquez was the closest, and you would have liked to have seen him hop on that thing. But, I mean, that's an easy clip to show everybody to play to the whistle. And that's a good point you make about the officials. Did we miss a part on that last question? Did he ask us to name the defense for next year?
He did. Back to Final Four. He wanted us to name – just talking about some guys that could come back. How do you see it? I mean, they have a lot of seniors, but is there anyone there that could use that year?
Well, I always look – at least what I've tried to do for a lot of these, like even potential transfers, I try to look at like true seniors this year who didn't get a red shirt. And like Mike
– Jaquez a guy that could do it?
I think both Jacquez and Square, and then I think even Marquand McCall are those. I think those are the only 3 4-year seniors on the team. Guys who didn't redshirt, guys who played from day one. So they're not like guys who have been in college like forever per se. I mean, I think it's pretty normal for a college football player to spend 5 years in school. So yeah, that's what Josh Ali was like last year. Now I know Josh had, you know, he needed to be. To be frank, Ali had no shot at playing professional football last year, and that opportunity allowed him to come back and showcase some things, so it made sense for him. Those two, I don't know what their draft stock is, honestly, at this point. They both had really good seasons. That'll be something I think that they need to get their feedback and then decide, but I think those two in particular, Jones and Square, that is, are guys that I think UK would be very interested in having come back. And also I think those two should at least consider it, but I'm having a hard time past that because Corker is going to be a draft pick. He won't be back. Like Asian doesn't get much NFL buzz, but he's played a whole lot. He's been here 5 years. Like maybe if he wanted to come back, I think you definitely take him back. No doubt about it. Am I forgetting anybody else? Like Jordan Wright, same deal, been there 5 years. Just those guys at a certain point, that's a long time to be in school playing football. And I think a lot of those guys would rather just take their chances, not have another year of wear and tear on their body. But someone like Square and Jones, I mean, they might see and even McCall, who's been hurt a lot of this year, maybe he feels the need to come back and try to show more. So those are the three that really stand out in my mind on defense. And on offense, there's really nobody. Nobody at all, I think, on offense that I could think of wanting to be a super senior.
Yeah. Good stuff from
maybe Isaiah Epps, like maybe him, but
that's possibly. Yeah. Good stuff from you as always. Always enjoy the football mailbags with you because that's where you really throw a lot of stuff into it. And especially your knowledge of the recruiting world and everything that you do a lot of studying on this on the 24/7 Sports Network, and do a fantastic job, Derek, on your end. I'm looking forward to continuing this football talk and looking forward to some basketball talk as we move throughout this week. The Blue White game Friday night, going to have some extra episodes coming up, recruiting stuff with football next week. I mean, it's basketball recruiting. Kaysen Wallace going to be coming up pretty soon, November 7th, I believe is that date. Kentucky Duke. I mean, we got a lot to talk about over the next few weeks. A lot of excitement. This football team has definitely helped the content of the show, and then basketball, certainly. We know that your passion, you basketball fans, just stick with us because there's going to be a lot of that coming as well. But as always, this episode is powered by Blue Wire Pods. It's also powered by the Butcher's Pub, 3 locations, Palmville, Williamsburg, London, Kentucky. You can visit thebutcherspub.com or check them out on Facebook. He's Derek Terry. I'm Sean Smith. We'll catch you next time on Kentucky Daily.